I am so excited for today. We are continuing our conversation with Gay Hendrix. He wrote The Big Leap. That first hour that we'd spent together flew by. And as always, I have my elite clients that will be coming in and joining this conversation and asking some questions at the end. He's got a new book now that we'll also be talking about. So here we go.
Chief Performance and Mindset Coach Hannah Khan, welcome back!
I make it part of my self-image, and the more I rest, the more I make.
Hannah Khan is an extraordinary woman. She has a very extraordinary understanding of how the mind functions.
Welcome to Possibilities with me, Hannah Khan. I'm a former psychotherapist, peak performance mindset coach, and I help you create a life you love through ease, joy, and fun. We are not about the hustle, the grind, and the struggle over here. And I'm so grateful that you are spending your time, the topic of this conversation, with us today. Now, this is a really exciting session that we have because it's a part two. This is my conversation with Gay Hendrix, and it was so great last time that we just knew we had to continue it. If you have not listened to the first one, we've got the link in the description, so you'll be able to give it a listen right after you listen to this one. Welcome to the show, Gay.
Thank you so much, Hannah. It's great to be with you again.
So great to be with you. Where we left off, I felt like we kind of had a cliffhanger here because we were talking about time. And you say here in The Big Leap, our Newtonian concept of both time and money is built on scarcity. And then you go on to say, when we switch to Einstein time, we take charge of the amount of time we have. We realize that we are where time comes from. We embrace this liberating insight. Since I'm the producer of time, I can make as much of it as I need. Can you please explain this difference between Newtonian and Einstein time?
Oh, I would so love to. Thank you. Oh. It's one of my favorite things to talk about because the payoff, it's not just about a philosophical discussion about time. If you really understand what we're talking about today, you'll get twice as much done in half the time. So it has a very practical application because time's here to stay. It was here before we got here, and it'll be here long after we're gone in cosmological terms. Now, in human terms, let's start at the very beginning. Ask yourself, if you're listening or watching to this, wonder question, when did I first become aware of time? What time in my life did I become aware of time? Was it before you started school or after you started? So just wonder about that. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just kind of, because I had a memory I want to share when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about today. The memory was of my brother, who's 8 years older than I am. At Christmas time in the first grade, so he was about maybe in the seventh or eighth grade, all I wanted was a wristwatch. And the one I wanted cost the outrageous price of, I think it was $2.99. So this is back in 1951, where you could get a pretty decent watch for $2. And this was what I fervently wanted. And so I got my watch for Christmas, and my brother tells me that he saw me down at the Western Union store. They had a clock in the window, what was the official time in the U.S. That's what it was, the Western Union time. And so my brother said he saw me like trying to set my watch right to the second and just waiting until I was lined up right with that thing. And so from a very early age, I've been very concerned with time. And so you may have come to time before that or after that. And now I'd like you to think a little bit more and wonder about what has been your relationship with time throughout your life. If you think of time the here and now as this moment. Some people have a relationship with time where they want to make sure they're ahead of it, you know. So, and I'm not saying either one of these is good or bad. You just need to notice this about yourself. I was one of those people that was always trying to kind of be out in front of it. I was a university professor for 21 years, and I would go to meetings, and I like to arrive 5 minutes early so I can kind of get my head together and get ready to deal with 10 other professors who are deciding some weighty topic. And so when I would get there 5 minutes early, sometimes I'd be the only one there, but sometimes there'd be this other guy named Dan there. And he was even more punctual than I was. But I just wanted to make the point that that was my kind of overcorrection in a way to time, was to make sure I was always out in front of it. And I grew up in a family where my mother was very time conscious. She was very, she had a deadline to meet every day. She was a newspaper columnist. So everything was all about getting that column into the paper by 7 o'clock so it could appear at next morning at 5 a.m. in the newspaper. So that was my heritage. Now, some other people have the other adaptation to time. They're behind it. You know, they come into a meeting 15 minutes late with a good apology. Oh, I'm sorry. It was just not my day. Oh, my gosh, traffic. Oh, my gosh. I live near L.A. and an hour north of L.A. And every conversation of every meeting must begin with a recitation of traffic issues. It's like wired into the culture. So you say, oh, man, I was lucky this morning. I sailed on the 101 or I got slammed at the DeSoto exit. You know, it's kind of like everything begins with that consideration because it's like a massive force in everybody's life. So I just wanted to promote a little wondering in you to get you kind of thinking about time and where you learned about time and what you do with time in the present. So,
well, Gay, as you say that, as you invited us to wonder, I thought about the language that I've heard myself say and what I hear with my clients and others and just out there in general. I don't have enough time. Oh, the time got away. There's not enough time in the day. Where did the hours go? So it does feel like what you had said about Newtonian time, that it is tied to lack and scarcity.
Yes. In fact, I want to really underline that because that's kind of my next big point I want to make, is that almost everybody lives in a sea of negative commentary about time. So all the things you just mentioned, oh, I'd love to talk to you, but I'm jammed for time. Or, if I had enough time, I'd write my novel. You know, I've heard so many versions of that one. And one of my mother's favorite things she would say in a moment of exasperation is, there simply are not enough hours in the day. And she would do this at much higher volume than I'm doing it. I don't want to overload my microphone here. But anyway, that was, all of those are occupying a victim relationship where time is the persecutor.
Okay, we need to pause there, Gay. We need to pause. And if you're listening, you want to take notes. I never even thought of a victim-persecutor relationship with time.
Yes. Every one of those statements you mentioned implies that I'm the victim and time is the problem. If I just had more of this thing over here, then I'd be happier over here. And that's a common mistake human beings make in all sorts of different ways. They look at they go out shopping for a minivan for the wife and the kids, and they see a red Ferrari convertible in the showroom and say, oh, that's what I want. And so we get carried away in the moment. And time is such a feature in life because if you went back in the world a few thousand years, people mostly told the time by pointing up to where the sun was. That was it, basically. Oh. And then they developed a super technology where they would put a stick on a disc and let the stick point to a certain place on the disc. And that was time. Then what happened in the Middle Ages, some geniuses over in Switzerland and places like that came up with this idea of a clock, tick, tock, tick, tock, because they were faced with a unique new problem. Getting a whole bunch of people who weren't used to showing up places at a certain time, getting them into those factories that were taking over the world. And so tick-tock became right in there with what I call the Newtonian version of time instead of the Einsteinian, which is the Newtonian version is about time being over there. And that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And so it works in a certain area of life, but not in the area of life that we're talking about. And so for us, what we need to do is come out of our victim relationship with time and get centered so that we know that we are always on time, because we're not thinking of it negatively or positively or any other way. We're just where time is occurring in this moment. You hear a lot of people talking now about being in the now or being in the here and now. That's been a common phrase for many, many years. And so what they're talking about is having the correct relationship with time, where you're not trying to be out in front of it, or you're not way back behind it, having everybody else look at you and say, come on, catch up, catch up, catch up. So take a moment and take a few breaths to that. When I first realized that, it was a moment of incredible liberation for me. And I hope it will be to you to come out of that victim relationship and start noticing when you say those little phrases that imply victimhood. Like, oh, I have to go. It's like going to the dentist, you know, I got my teeth cleaned a while back. And I noticed my mind first thought of, I have to go to the dentist. I have to go to the dentist. Oh, I have to go to the dentist this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Then I realized what a disempowering thing for me to put myself in. So I made up a new verb. I choose to go to the dentist this afternoon. And then I went even farther. What could he be? I celebrate going to the dentist this afternoon. And so this day became about celebration. So when I got to the office, I celebrated them for being so friendly and kindly to me every time I've been there over the years. And even though that's their job, they lit up, you know?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did, because there's because you must have been a breath of fresh air coming in there celebrating and pleased to be there. And pleased, if I can take this further with you, Gay, that you're acknowledging that you are pleased to be there in this time and space.
Yes, exactly.
To be there in this time.
Yes, because I didn't say, hey, I felt appreciative of you guys yesterday. You know, this was a right in the moment thing. And I extended that to the young woman who was going to do my teeth cleaning. And wow, I learned so much about her over the next 45 minutes. You know, just things I would never in a million years known if I was just, you know, getting my teeth cleaned. So anyway, it's all about celebrating and choosing this moment rather than being anxiously out in front of time or sluggishly behind time. It's about being exactly where you are when you are. And one thing you can just catch right away is start noticing when you claim victimhood with regard to time.
I love this.
Yeah, and a lot of people claim victimhood with place, with space. Oh, I gotta see you guys at the bar later because I gotta go home and have dinner with my wife and kids. You know, so that's having a victimhood with space, that you're the victim of a place you're going to be.
Oh my gosh, Gay, I never even thought of that. Just when I think it couldn't get any better, just more gems, you're just dropping gem after gem after gem. It's so interesting because in part one, and again, if you haven't heard it, the link is in the description. In part one, you talked about in relationships, this idea to, many times it's a race to occupy the victim state. And I'm noticing that there can be a race to occupy the victim state now with time. There can be a race to occupy the victim state with place and space. This is just so, so incredible to know and reflect on. And I want to ask you something about this, because many of the people that are listening to this and my clients, they are spectacular, incredible people. And they are doing extraordinary things in the world. And many of them also have families, young families. So they can, time can feel a certain way to them. So what is a way that you would suggest for somebody, and we'll just use this example, an entrepreneur running a business and has a young family, how would you suggest they think about time and the relationship that you think they should create with time?
Yes, the most efficient thing you can do to get a relationship with time is to claim and acknowledge and celebrate that you're where time comes from. That may seem like a tall metaphysical order, but think about it for a moment. If you don't think that, you're claiming victimhood. You're saying time is over there and I don't have enough of it. And if you can just own it, that's what I did in my life. I realized, oh, I feel anxious a lot of time because I feel pressed for time. What is the solution to that? It's not to do less. And I certainly didn't want to do more or do it faster or anything. I wanted to have the correct relationship with time. And so I did a lot of wondering about that. And what I eventually came up with was this liberating insight, and I've felt on fire with it ever since, is that, oh, I am part of this universe. I am this universe. I was created by this universe. And this universe does not make mistakes. It's basically always creating. Now, we as human beings are at a place in evolution with our big fine minds, which have some great benefits. But one of the negative benefits of the mind is that this big mind is always arguing with reality. We use our logic to try to argue with our emotions. Let's say we feel scared about something. There's this little part in the mind that's up there saying, oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. You don't need to be scared. Or if you're angry about something, you don't need to be angry. You know, come on, be compassionate, forgive, forget. So we got all of these messages coming down from, quote, on high, and they literally are higher in our brain where those messages come from than the feelings are that we're trying to talk ourselves out of. If you look at the human brain, it's about the size of a good-sized grapefruit, weighs, you know, 3.5 pounds or so, a real meaty grapefruit. Well, the part of us that can talk is in the part of the grapefruit that's the rind. It's a very small part. The part of us that can feel is down in the juicy part of the grapefruit. And that's, we need to really be cognizant of that at all times, that we're a great big feeling machine and we need to let our minds get into harmony with that. And so the same move that you use to befriend your feelings is the same move that you use to befriend time, to say, okay, I'd be willing to conceive of time being my friend. I'd be willing to let go of the idea that time is somehow scarce. I'd be willing to let go of the idea that I need to be less busy and have more time. So what I'm suggesting is letting go of all of your current limiting beliefs about time. It took me years to do that. It won't take you years because I wrote a whole book about it. So you can just read the manual. People ask me, how long did it take you to write The Big Leap? And I say, well, it took me less than a year to write it, but I've been thinking about it for 30 or 40 years. And, you know, because I was sort of obsessed with all the topics that are in The Big Leap, and I used them practically every day of my life. Let me give you an example. Many of your viewers and listeners and perhaps yourself, I don't know your background, but many of us are in close one-on-one family romantic relationships where we're committed to a partner. Okay. So that idea that I'm just talking about is the same way you transform your relationships. Katie and I have had here in the office or in our seminars, I think now close to 5,000 couples over the years. And this could be maybe 10 or 15% of them are in same-sex relationships. The majority are in heterosexual relationships, but there's a wide variety of cultures because we've been around the world a bunch of times teaching our relationship seminars. So what I'm talking about, if you're in Europe or Canada or South Africa or Australia or wherever you are, I've seen this issue come to play. So when a couple comes in here, they are almost always solidly entrenched in the victim position. They think the other person is responsible for their misery. Well, sometimes you can make a good argument that the other person, you know, if this person comes home drunk all the time and is mean to the kids, you could say, oh, they are the Newtonian cause of that misery. However, Einsteinian goes a step further and says, what is it about me and my vibrational rate that is attracting that particular type of behavior? Because in the Einsteinian world, like really does attract like. But it goes both ways. You know that if you, let me just give you a good example. I worked with a person once, a woman in her 30s, that her husband had been physically abusive to her. And she got out of that marriage and then went out and got into another relationship with another person who was in many ways worse than the first one. Now, when that kind of thing happens, and certainly in my own life, if I've got a pattern, oftentimes I don't wake up to it being a pattern until I've done it a whole bunch of times. Right. You know, like in my own relationships, I had kind of a loner script. And I think I had this old unconscious belief that I better not get too close to anybody for fear that they'll die too, like my father died. And when my father died, my mother sort of disappeared emotionally, and she was never really back in her whole life because she got into some addictive stuff, and she, you know, stayed addicted to those things until she died at age 79. And so what happens oftentimes is some event, a terrible event, takes us out of the present where we don't feel capable of experiencing that much pain or agony or fear or confusion or whatever the thing is that we don't want to experience. And so in those moments, what happens is we glom onto limiting beliefs like, don't get close for fear you'll get hurt again. That was my particular one. So the important thing I'm getting at, though, is we need to start examining all of our limiting beliefs about time and other people and what has to happen to us in the world. Because vibrationally, we're always getting what's appropriate to that vibrational space. But a lot of times we don't understand what's causing our vibrational nature. What's causing it is a whole bunch of things that we're resisting. We're using that part of our mind to keep from feeling a bunch of anger or keep from admitting that we don't love our partner anymore, or whatever that terrible thing is that we're trying to keep ourselves from admitting to ourselves. I saw in the back of a car once in Cambridge, Massachusetts in 1968. I was poking along in traffic in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I saw a bumper sticker in front of me that said, "What are you pretending not to know?" Talk about a wake-up moment. Yes. You know, suddenly I was realizing, wow, that's a lot of stuff that I'm pretending not to know. And, you know, we've all got a stack of old feelings and limiting beliefs and things like that. So the best thing we can do is start befriending them and saying, show me where I'm claiming victimhood of time. Show me where I feel like a victim in my relationships. So making yourself a big learning machine for learning about this particular area.
And Gabe, I have one more question, then we'll open it up to our listeners that are here, the clients that are here. Tell me about zone of genius, being in your zone of genius, and time.
Yes. Well, the payoff for being in the present is also that you get to reside in your genius zone. Because as you spend more of your time in the present, rather than out in front or behind thinking about the past or anxiously thinking about the future, the more you spend time in the present, which is claiming that you belong here, claiming that you are in this universe too, you're not separate, we're part of all the same act of creation. The moment you begin to think that way and realize, oh, therefore, I can make up all the time I need to do whatever it is I want to do. There are some places in the universe that are very busy and some that are very spacious. Astronomers tell us that there's a place out in the universe that's spewing out 32 new suns, like our sun, 32 of those per second. Ooh, you know, that's a hot spot in the universe. There are whole other spots in the universe that are tremendously cool, that have very cool frozen pieces of rock on them. So this is a big universe, and we happen to be in a kind of a sweet spot of it that grows life. And, you know, we're 9 million species on this planet right now. There used to be more, but most of the species on our planet are ones that you'll never see because they're bugs in the Amazon basin and places like that. But we are very fortunate to be the one of those species that can have a great conversation about eliminating our time issues. And the best advice is own it. I'm where time comes from. I'm going to make up as much as I need to do the things I most love to do. And that is your genius zone. What you most love to do and what makes your biggest contribution to the people around you, whether it's your family or to millions of people that watch these shows.
And here's the crazy thing that just hit me. When you are in your zone of genius, when you're in that place, there's no sense of time.
That's right. Yeah, you're free of time in the traditional sense.
You're free of time. You're free of the, like, there's no sense of time when you're in flow, when you're in it. Like, time is, it's so, there's just no sense of it. It's so different.
Yes, and it's very liberating, too. I felt an incredible release the moment I realized all of that. And in general, with victimhood in particular, you know, a lot of us go around claiming victimhood in all sorts of different ways. So that's a big thing. You have to really study that in yourself. But there's also people that go around taking advantage of that by, you know, if you think of a relationship with two people is 100% responsibility over here and 100% responsibility over here. Then when this happens, there's still 100% responsibility over here and 100% over here. These two things are whole unto themselves. But on this planet, there's a lot of craziness about that issue. You know, that a lot of, like, for example, if you turn on the radio, you're likely to hear a song about victimhood. Sometimes it's about empowerment with Taylor Swift and things like that. But like, if you turn on a typical country song, it's not about empowerment. It's about somebody stole, died.
The person, yeah. the partner left. They lost their job. Like,
I got drunk the day my mama got out of prison. You know, that's the country song. And so I've actually written a few of those, by the way. And if I may brag, one year I earned $3.63 from the sale of the lyrics of a song that I had written. So just want to put that on the record here, that if you're considering a career in the songwriting trade, I recommend that you go into the self-help writing, book writing trade.
Would you say, Gay, that wasn't quite your zone of genius?
Exactly. Not my zone of
genius. Wasn't a zone of competence even at $3? I don't know. But I'm not judging.
Well, you know, I have a lot of good friends in the music business. One of my good friends for the last 30 years is Kenny Loggins. And I've showed him some lyrics and he said, hey, that's pretty good. Keep working. But a couple of times I've shown him lyrics and he said, go back to writing self-help books.
I love that. We need those honest friends. Okay, what I would love to do now is I want to invite my clients to come on, turn on your cameras, and please raise your hand if you have a question for Gay. We have a few minutes here. And then after your questions, the way that where I want to go to, actually, maybe while they're thinking of their questions and you raise your hand, where we could go next, Gay, is what is the best way to use this book so we can get the most out of it? Everybody, do you want to all show your books to Gay? Everyone's got the book. And we'll Thank do a you. Picture after. But what is the best way that we can use this book?
Pick a day, today or tomorrow. Pick a day soon and just open the book to day one. And each day, it doesn't take very much time at all. It'll take you a few minutes to read the concept or the sort of the lesson of the day. And then it could take you as little as 10 seconds to do the activity. Sometimes they're 2 or 3 minutes, but most of the time you can do the whole page in a couple of minutes and then just do what it asks you to do throughout the day. It might say, think about something several times or write down something 3 or 4 times today. So it's laid out, if I may say so. I cannot tell you how much time it took for us to get that book laid out in the way it's laid out. So it's laid out in 3 ascending cycles. And the first cycle takes you through several months. And then the next cycle takes you through a bunch more months. And then the third cycle takes you through the rest of the year. And so each one of them kind of builds on the other. And they're laid out in a very particular way so that it gives you kind of a steady lift throughout the year. That's what we're going for, is rather than one big leap, to have the whole year a giant big leap. And so pick a day and get started one day at a time.
So this
I have people that bought the book the first day it was available on back in February and have been doing now the first couple of weeks. And I'm getting wonderful email. I can't wait to share those sometimes because I think it's the act of doing something every day You know, that's the thing, something simple to do. And, you know, if you went every day to the gym and just did one chin up, you know, by the end of the year, if you kept adding one more to it, you'd be doing 52 chin ups a day. I can't do that, by the way. So I'm just used an example that has no application to me, but
no application to me either.
I like to think of myself as an active person. So, but just doing things in a disciplined way is such a, to me, a smart thing to do. It's like the old joke of the person that comes up to the policeman in Central Park and says, "How do I get to Carnegie Hall?" And the cop says, "Practice, practice, practice." You know, so that's what we need to do.
Exactly. I love that. Practice, practice, practice. And I agree with you, you know, on many of my clients that you're seeing here today, we were on a morning call. We're in the Eastern time zone. Some of us are in the Eastern time zone. And I do a call every morning at 6 a.m. And this is what we do. We get ourselves into a peak state. We think about our goals. We study. And it's such a beautiful way to start the day. And it's doing, and then there's the compound effect. And I love that this is so easy. And what I also love about it is that you can start it every time, anytime. So this is not a Jan 1st thing. This is a February 20th. It can be an April 13th. You get this and you start it. So for my clients, and I know many of you, we've had conversations about time. We're with the master here. What question, and if you can raise your virtual hand, I can bring you up, or Charmaine will bring you up. What question do you have for Gay around time or from the Big Leap? Nothing is off limits.
I'm yours for the next 15 minutes anyway.
Liz Bovee.
Thank you so much for this amazing opportunity. And thank you, Hannah, for putting it together. Everything you said makes sense. And I do see times where I do take a victim stance on time. So I really appreciate that. Hannah was talking about her clients with families, and I'm one of those. I also recognize that I grew up with a parent who just, I don't know what his relationship with time is, but it's certainly not anything that you just spoke about. It's a very different stance. So I think there's a lot of paradigms there from my upbringing. But how would you, I own and operate Montessori, I'm the CEO and founder of Westside Montessori School, and I lead a team of about 37. I would love to break this down in a way that is accessible for folks who haven't necessarily been doing mindset work for a number of years and aren't practicing, you know, aren't on calls with Hina daily. Many of my team members have read The Big Leap, but do you have any tips and tricks or ways of breaking it down for anyone?
Yes. One big message of life is it corresponds to our breathing. In life, there's the in-breath and then the out-breath. That happens 20,000 times a day. And the rest of us have a lot to do with that rhythm itself, because if you think of one metaphor for the in-breath is receiving. How much can I receive? Am I receiving the full measure of my in-breath? And then on the out-breath, how much can I express? Am I expressing my fullness into the world? Am I giving the world what is most sacred to me? See, those are what I call genius questions. Like, am I doing what I love to do? And am I doing what gives the biggest contribution I can make to the world around me? And like my old mentor, Abraham Maslow, said way back in the early 70s, he said, it doesn't matter whether you're making a genius soup for five people or composing a genius symphony for 5 million people. It's all the same. It's always about either how much can I experience, and it's about how much can I express. And so as you go through life, one simple thing to do, because you're going to be breathing every moment, I implore you to do that. And if you are breathing, you've got a reminder of, am I allowing myself to experience life to the fullest? And am I allowing myself to express my genius, my full unique genius to the world? And here's my discovery. After working with about 20,000 people over since 1980 on these particular issues, we've all got little barriers in the way of both those things. So the question you got to start asking yourself is, what's in the way of me experiencing things fully? Do I stop myself short for some reason? What's keeping me from experiencing all the love that I can possibly experience and all the success and receiving all the goodness that I could be receiving? And the other question, out-breath question, is how much can I express? Am I expressing the full measure of my genius? And if not, why? Now, the trick I can give you right now is to ask these questions in a loving manner. Use them to befriend yourself. Don't ever beat up on yourself, because love is the one thing that can resolve things in yourself, because it's the one thing that can embrace its opposite. In other words, you can love yourself for not being able to love yourself, and you can love yourself for having a poor relationship with time. Love is bigger than those things. So my trick is to let your 20,000 breaths a day remind you of the possibility that you could be receiving the full measure of the good things of life rather than warding them off.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Beautiful. Oh, by the way, I can't say enough positive about Montessori schools. I've spoken at many Montessori schools, and I've been very pleased by what I saw going on there. And I've spoken to groups of Montessori educators and that kind of thing. And so I have great respect for what you're doing. So blessings to you for finding a work that, in my opinion, can not only call forth your genius, but also spark the genius of coming generations.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, could not agree more. Thank you. Do we have another question for Gay?
Hi, Gay. And hello, Hannah. And thank you for this opportunity. So, been loving your work. And my question is around definitely time. I love the reframe of looking at victim. I definitely have played the victim card when it comes to time. I'm one of those where time, wherever I need to be, get there 5 minutes ahead. And making sure everyone else is getting there too, where I have my significant other who is more relaxed. So we're pulling is how it's been. And it's always me getting too anxious. So definitely liking this reframe to just help me calm my nervous system and just have a better relationship with time. So as I welcome your invitation for auditing my limiting beliefs, because there are a lot around that. But as I wear one hat as a corporate employee and listening to the whispers, launching my own coaching program, podcast, etc., the corporate world, I have deadlines. So that be on time, meet them. So I'm trying to, you know, unmarry those habits while I become more less of a victim with time, but there's always that ticking time clock in my mind. So for corporate employees, what would you share with us to knowing we have deadlines and lots of personalities you're dealing with? How can you continue not being the victim with time and moving through your day?
Great question. And so the way I look at it is that's where most people start. Like when I started thinking about these things a lot, I was a university professor. And so I had to function within that milieu as you do within your corporate milieu. So just take a moment and say, okay, that's where most of us start. Okay, that's exactly where I'm starting. Here's my specific advice. Start by spending 10 more minutes a day in your genius zone. Even if the only thing you do in that 10 minutes is sit in your office at your corporate job and just think, what is my true genius? What do I most love to do? All those questions that are laid out in the Big Leap, you just ask yourself those questions. But here's the specific thing you're doing. You're now taking over your own deadline. You say, tomorrow at this time, between 11:10 and 11:20, I've got penciled into my calendar my genius time. So start with 10 minutes. Okay. Would you do that?
Definitely will do that. Thank you.
Okay. Good. And everybody I've ever had do that, eventually that leads to them wanting to do 20 minutes. And I can promise you that you have if you have a job in the establishment world, whether it's a corporation or military or a school or whatever it is, you have certain deadlines you have to hit and places you have to show up. Well, we're not saying the Einsteinian world or the Newtonian world. You see, the great thing about Einsteinian physics is it embraced the Newtonian. It didn't throw out the, whatever it is, the bathwater or whatever that saying is. It didn't say that's old fashioned. No, it's a reality of time that if, like in Newton's case, if the apple fell off the tree and hit him on the head, by golly, there was some force at work there. Why didn't the apple float upward? You know, and so for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. It works in that world, and it led to some amazing breakthrough thinking in the world. You know, like the creation of the modern wristwatch and machines that will get you from Toronto to LA with a machine making the decisions that would be infuriating for a person to make over the 6-hour period. So let's love the Newtonian and let's expand into embracing the Einsteinian, which is that the quality of the reality that you experience is equal to the quality of your own vibrational rate. And so it's a world of absolute equals. That's why, before I go on to my next activity today, I really want to resound this gong once again of, in a loving way, taking full responsibility for the reality you want to create and the reality you are currently creating. And believe me, if you start doing 10 minutes a day, you're going to want to do 20, and then pretty soon you're going to walk into your boss and say, hey, there's this whole other thing I'd like to be doing. I've seen that happen so many times, but maybe that's not your situation. Maybe you'll start like there's an old spiritual saying, comes from the Sufi tradition. It says, we all need people on a spiritual quest need to learn to do our work with the other hand. In other words, you need to get so good at your corporate job that you can do it with your other hand, but you know that life is about the calling forth of your genius. That's what your dominant hand is up to, and you're in this corporate situation now with an opportunity to start doing more and more of that. Then when you get too big for the corporation, like, you know, Oprah Winfrey, I'm one of the lucky ones. Oprah solved all of my financial problems in 1 hour. When Katie and I were first on her show with our book, Conscious Loving, which was our first big relationship book, you know, we went from selling 10,000 books a month to selling 10,000 books an hour. And so, you know, within a very few months after being on that show with that kind of power for the first time, it changed everything financially about our lives. And it enabled us to do more and more and more of what we most love to do. So we went kind of from whoosh. That's not everybody's trajectory usually, you know, it doesn't happen. In fact, there's no equivalent thing you can do anymore. that has the power of having her hold up your book and recommend it. So even the next time I was on there on that show, she was doing it differently and all that. So things change in the world. And now the only way to get famous is to get on the Hina Khan podcast, which I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do. And by the way, you probably know this, but I learned from my assistant that there's a Bollywood star with your name. And I happen to know this because my assistant, who didn't do quite enough research, says, "Wow, there's a famous Indian movie star that's going to be interviewing you." And, well, let me clear that one up here. I know you're the famous podcaster now. I know that you're not the Bollywood person.
Thank you, Gay. Thank you so much. So 10 minutes a day, you're committing to that, Miriam?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right. The universe will be listening to that. The universe will be listening, Miriam.
Yeah. And don't you love that, Gay? The universe will be listening and it will communicate back. It will communicate back with signs, synchronicities, ideas. Gay, thank you. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful rest of your day. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Gay, we look forward to diving into this. And we're going to send you emails as well, because we want to send you how it's going.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone. All right. Bye for now.